in association with iFanboy, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress presenting another double feature for you today. First up, it's Brian Azzarello, who talks about his work on the Batman Flashpoint miniseries with 100 Bullets co-creators Eduardo Risso and Dave Johnson. We also talk about his and Risso's new series for Vertigo, Spaceman, which we got a taste of in the Strange Adventures anthology a couple months ago, and it will continue later this fall in a new 8-part story. Then Phil Hester joins us to talk about his new work on Dynamite's new Bionic Man series. It started as a Kevin Smith screenplay, much like the Green Hornet series at Dynamite, and we've got the same players with Smith, Hester, and Jonathan Lau as the creative team. Hester also talks about his work on Green Hornet. Great Top Cow work. He's winding up his run on The Darkness, but that doesn't mean more new projects are on the way for him at Top Cow. Plus, he wrapped up a series on IDW, Godzilla with Eric Powell, and he talks about wrapping things up on J. Michael Straczynski's Wonder Woman, which he successfully took over. All that and a bit of ape talk right at the end, but it's a good episode of Word Balloon. It's all brought to you today by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where you'll find a wide selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, absolute editions, omnibus editions, essentials, and more. Plenty of product with Brian Azzarello's name and Phil Hester's name on it, both Phil as an artist and as a writer at InStockTrades.com. Also, their sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at DCBService.com, which is a great option for all your monthly magazine needs. They want you to know that for the DC relaunch of all new 52 titles, anyone can order a bundle of all 52 titles for 50% off the normal retail price. Individual pricing for their issues is 42% off across the board for all the new number ones. Check out all the amazing values and discounts waiting for you at both InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service, DCBService.com.
First of all, Flashpoint Batman is fantastic. Great first issue. Nice to see the entire 100 Bullets team back together.
Yeah.
Is Dave doing all three covers?
Yes, he is.
Man, we think Bruce Wayne is a clenched fist. The way Eduardo is drawing him, and I'm assuming this was part of your direction to him, Thomas Wayne has just got this permanent scowl.
Yeah, he's not a very happy man.
And we thought, yeah, and I mean, we certainly thought Batman, or Bruce was a driven man.
Well, Bruce is a brooding man, you know?
And what is Thomas?
I don't think Thomas broods at all.
No, he acts.
Yes.
And doesn't have doesn't suffer fools and really just cuts to the chase of, you're a problem, let's fix it. We see that really from the start in that first scene, even with the psychiatrist.
Right.
Very interesting. I love the relationships with recognizable characters from Commissioner Gordon, now Security Gordon, I guess Security Chief Gordon. And and also, it looks like Harvey Dent is kind of has got, at least for now, the heart in the story, or it seems to be the, you know, the human being in the story.
Well, they're all human beings.
Well, you know what I mean.
I think you're going to see Gordon as the heart of the story. You've only got one issue so far.
Very interesting, man. A really interesting world, and why Thomas's choices from a business front to why does he, you know, the need to put the costume on. I mean, there's a guy that really, even more so, you know, doesn't really, there's not much of a line between Batman and Thomas Wayne. Or
right.
Division.
Right. Yeah, he's not a millionaire playboy.
Yeah, and doesn't need to put on any type of public front.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, is Donald Trump, is he kind of was he kind of an inspiration in terms of what kind of guy Thomas Wayne is?
Donald Trump's not an inspiration for me in the least.
Well, I don't even mean from any type of, you know, humanitarian of the year sort of thing, but just in terms of, yeah, like, all right, this is what I want, get it done.
No. Nope. No.
Okay. It's been, you know, honestly, every time you come back to Batman, it is always a little different. The Wednesday comics was very different from Broken City. Joker is certainly a different, I mean, Batman's not in it, but I guess we kind of consider it a Batman-esque sort of story. Maybe not.
Well, every time I do Batman, I want to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
There's that character, he works so well, I think, because you can pull out little different aspects of him and really make him the focus of the story. You know?
But
he's really just treating these things like myths.
But like this, as opposed to Bruce and everything, you know, I don't think Thomas is really looking for any sort of truth other than, you know, this is in my way. I will do what I need to do to get whatever obstacle it is out of my way.
Yes, but that's not always the best way, and if you know what I mean.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Well, and also I loved in the fight with Croc what's going through his mind, and it's interesting to see the crime alley scene. And am I right? It's almost as if he is. It's like what, you know, it's that cathartic, what I would have liked to have done if I had the chance. And maybe that's the thing. Maybe crime alley was his missed opportunity. Is that a fair way to see it? And that being Batman is, I'm never going to let that happen again.
Well, yeah, he holds a grudge.
Right.
Maybe even more so than Bruce. You know?
Oh, yeah. Well, and of course, I mean, that is the thing that I think as people become adults, they hear about and see, unfortunately, that when a parent survives the death of a child, it's really, in a lot of ways, more traumatic than the child suffering a parent's death.
Right. Yeah, I mean, let's see. Well, I think Bruce fights crime to avenge his parents' death. And Thomas fights crime because it killed his family. He's a lot angrier, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think I don't know. Joe says he's a lot like me.
Well, I think you're friendlier than that, but that's all right.
Well, you know, I like to get things done too.
I don't know if this is subconscious or not. The colors remind me of Dark Knight in a lot of ways. And I don't know why, but a lot of the, just, you know, certainly the, you know, you've got the conversations of Thomas and Gordon on the rooftop. And for whatever reason, it occurred to me that it felt very Dark Knight Returns to me.
Uh-huh. Well, that's Trish, you know.
Okay.
She's brilliant.
Yes, she is. It's a great start, and is it its own story? I mean, that, you know, how much does it dovetail into Flashpoint beyond being this is the universe, or is this just one story in the Flashpoint universe?
It'll dovetail a little.
Okay.
Some of his motivations in Flashpoint will. You'll understand them better because of this series.
Okay.
You know, it's but it works. You know, like Flash isn't in it.
All right. Yeah. Will we see other heroes in it?
There are no heroes in this book.
Will we see other people fighting crime that are costumed in this book?
No, we won't.
Okay. will we go back in his past anymore? I mean, like I said, we've replayed the crime alley scene a bit. And
yes, we're going to go back into his past.
Okay. That's, you know, I just finished talking to Jeff Lemire about his books, and he's doing the Frankenstein Creature Commandos Flashpoint thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so interesting, and that's why I like this event, is because I really think a lot of people initially thought, you know something, with all the changes coming in the new version of the DC Universe, I can blow this stuff off. But there's really interesting stories happening here, and also in such a concentrated form. You've only got 3 issues to really tell this story.
Right. So, yeah, and nobody should blow this off. You know? Especially now that what's going to happen in September.
Is anything that we see in this miniseries, will there be reverberations Flashpoint
in the Batman series?
Yes.
God, I hope not.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, regardless, man, I mean, that's the thing. I think your self-contained stories are you know, A Broken City pretty much was a self-contained story. Certainly the Wednesday's Comics Batman story was. Joker has been, or was.
Yeah.
No, this is great. Honestly, as soon as I heard, you know, that you were doing the Batman one, I know a lot of people, they're like, okay, this will be a fun ride, so this is going to be cool. And
it gets a lot bumpier.
Good. No, that's great, man. Terrific.
I think next month people are going to wet themselves.
Well, yeah, I'm assuming we'll see more of the Joker. I mean, we got a little tease at the end of issue one.
Yeah.
So, and Croc, and more Bat.
Well, really no more Croc.
Right. Yes, exactly. And that was the thing. Yeah, I was going to say. Now, you've taken, you know, Croc is eliminated from the Flashpoint universe. Will we see more other Batman villains before the three issues are up?
You'll see some more Gotham characters for sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure. No, that's excellent, man. And like I said, I don't want you to spoil. So
no, it's only three issues. So if I talk about it, you know.
No, I understand.
I only have 60 pages here. I'm putting it all in that.
That's excellent. Well, it no page was wasted in issue one. So can't wait to see the other two issues come out. So nice going. Very cool. Let's talk about Spaceman for a second.
Sure.
So this was kind of a prelude, and when does the series begin?
It'll begin this fall.
Okay.
Yeah. Once all this other, once the smoke clears from September.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, obviously, so that's going to be big DCU splash, and then, you know, Spaceman's obviously a Vertigo book, right?
Right, right.
Cool. You know, was there... And again, I don't want to get into maybe the minutiae of why Wonder Woman or anything, but you've always been a guy, and I think Spaceman is a good example of this, certainly Loveless, 100 Bullets, where you've really, you know, kind of carved this niche for yourself as what's the next Brian Azzarello story. And I really think that your readership, you know, kind of does. It trusts you in terms of story almost more than whatever the subject might be. And I wonder, was, you know... Did DC Editorial want to connect you more to the superhero universe by possibly other things that might have been suggested?
Dan's been trying to get me to do stuff down there for a long time, you know. And, you know, I guess, you know, probably just about every year or two, or, you know, I'll go do something in the DCU. You know, if I got a story to tell. Otherwise, I'm not going to tell it.
Understood. All right. On to Spaceman. So let me figure out if I've got right, you know, what I was able to get from Strange Adventures. So our hero is, or our main character, if not hero, is one of 17 children that were kind of engineered to make the trip to Mars. But then I think when the facts came out about this character, or about these 17 children... People were outraged, and it kind of canceled the space program. Is that?
That's it.
Okay, so so what happens to the super soldier or superhuman that is, you know, designed for one thing? What happens after society decides a different game plan for that person?
That's the story.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, this is kind of just an interlude, obviously, first chapter.
Yeah, I mean, what we were trying to do is just like establish our ground rules, you know. You know what the world's like. Who our main character is. You know, just to make it easier for people. You know,
mm-hmm.
We weren't really trying to be too obtuse.
I understand. It's this will be a monthly, obviously.
It'll be monthly
ish,
but not. You won't get 12 issues a year.
I was going to say, well, kind of like 100 Bullets, and that's okay. I mean, you know.
No, it's not even going to be like that.
Oh.
There was only a couple years you didn't get 12 issues of 100 Bullets.
Okay.
Most of the time, you got those. No, we're just gonna you know, we're thinking maybe 8 or 9 issues a year.
Okay.
You know, just put it out. It's a mini series, or, you know, it's a maxi series. I don't know. 8, 9, is that maxi or mini?
I think it's right in the middle. Well, that's what I was wondering. Is it going to be like you do a story arc, then you take a couple months off, and then you come back?
That's what we're talking about, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Is the first... is
we
the
might
first...
even just do a story arc, finish it, and then go on to something else and come back later. You know?
Oh, I see. Like, literally just, okay, story arc, you guys do a different project and come back to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe. We'll see, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
We have... we have 3 or 4 things right now that we're working on. We, meaning Eduardo and I.
Yeah, well, that's honestly, that's one of the things I was going to ask was he willing to jump into a long-term thing? But obviously you just answered that, then maybe you guys are going to work on a bunch of other things and
yeah,
jump around. Cool.
I mean, when we were finishing up 100 Bullets, I sent him, I had like 4 ideas for something that we could do. I sent them to him. So which one do you want to do? And he said, why don't we just do them all?
Awesome.
Okay.
That's kind of what I was wondering, was how much he had to do beyond design with, you know, story ideas and stuff. So they started with you, but you kind of threw them to him, and he's like, yes to all of them.
Yeah.
Cool. Very cool. Can you tell me the other genres, or if you want to keep that secret, that's fine.
Oh, let's see. What were we doing? We were talking about doing a period piece. Set in the 50s in Berlin.
Cool.
Yeah. So what were we doing? Period, and then this science fiction thing, which is Spaceman,
mm-hmm.
which is really going to be grounded in reality. You know, it's not too far in the future.
Yeah, I sense that from the opening. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of, it's a very recognizable world. If all these dire predictions that the environmentalists are making come true.
Right. Okay.
And, you know, we still talk about 100 Bullets, too.
So you might go back to the 100 Bullets world?
Maybe.
Okay. Okay. Cool. Not
everybody died.
No. You know, well, it's still fresh and everything, so yeah, you know. Whenever you guys feel recharged and everything like that, I'm sure everyone will be excited to see you come back to it if you want, if you choose to. But 50s Berlin, shit, you have me at hello.
Oh, okay.
Well, I am. I'm a big Cold War kind of fan. And I mean, that's supposition that if it's set in 50s Berlin, it's not a, you know, wacky romantic musical or anything. It might be.
No, it's a spy picture.
There you go. Absolutely, man. Very cool. You know, the BBC right now on the radio is doing all of the John Le Carré Smiley stories.
Oh, really?
Yes. Really neat. And they're doing them in 90-minute stories. They're like 90 minutes or maybe even hours. I'm not sure. I have to think about that. But BBC 4 Extra, if you go there.
Okay.
You'll find, and they just did Spyo Came In from the Cold.
Oh.
But they started with the 2 earlier George Smiley stories, and I'm blanking on the names of them.
Okay.
So, yeah, they're doing like all 6 or 8. I forget how many George Smiley Le Carré stories there are, but they're all in there.
Funny, I'm talking to you, and I'm staring at the DVD of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
It's sitting on my shelf.
Yeah.
I love the Alec Guinness was awesome. Yeah, great, great. Both that and Smiley's People. Those are unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So that's good, man. You see, this is what I do when I talk to Rucka and Brubaker, too. We talk about DVDs and stuff. So we do this as well, you and I,
yeah,
on occasion. And we talk boxing.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get the UFC last weekend?
No.
I hear we dodged a bullet. I heard it wasn't that good. Frank Mir and had a fight, and Rampage Jackson had a fight, and they both sucked, I understand.
Yeah, I read the recap of that stuff.
Yeah, so did I on Sunday. So that's all right. Now let's talk about First Wave.
Okay.
So, like, you know, I remember, first of all, The best thing was back in, was it 2009 at Wizard Chicago that you made the announcement?
Maybe.
And what I love, exactly, that's what I loved about it was, who's excited about this? And you said, no one is excited about this. Guys in their 50s might be excited about this. That's about it. Well, right. I was excited about it. Now, like, I guess the only thing I can ask is what happened?
What happened?
What happened? Because it sounded like, you know, there was, it started with, I think, the best intentions, and I think you had very good writers and artists on it, but like something didn't gel.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, I was right. No one was interested.
Was it tough doing what you wanted to do in terms of a story and everything? I mean, were the rights holders kind of tough to?
No, not at all.
Okay,
no, they were totally behind what we were doing.
Okay,
you know, and you know, all the authority figures were, you know, yes, these are, you know, you guys are on the right track. This is a, you know, these are nice reinterpretations of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the bosses were smiling until the receipts came in, you know?
Yeah. Well, I got to say, man, I liked what Jason did with The Avenger.
Yeah.
And I liked the spirit. I thought David did a good job. I think the artist backed him up and did wonderful work.
Yeah.
You know, Doc Savage felt like Doc. I mean, that's the thing. I think everything was consistent. It really is, I guess, just... Maybe these characters have been on the shelf so long that you're right. Maybe because, you know, maybe it's that just nobody cared because out of sight, out of mind.
Or, you know, with readers, maybe these type of characters just don't, you know, they don't resonate.
Yeah.
Or maybe my story didn't resonate, you know. Or this world didn't resonate with them. You know, it could be my fault, too.
No.
Everybody loved Batman with guns, though. Yippee.
No, but that's the thing, man. Honestly, I really thought that it was, again, from my standpoint, and again, I mean, I grew up reading those pulps. You know, this was back when they were republishing all that stuff in paperback form.
Yeah.
So I read all that stuff in the 70s when I was a little kid. I don't know.
They didn't, you know, comic readers didn't respond.
Yeah. Are they going to collect it, or are they not going to bother, or?
Hardcover just came out.
Okay, good. Of First Wave.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, man. Well, good effort. You know.
Thanks.
Hey, you can't win them all. That's all right. I mean, you know.
Oh, I know you can't.
You've hit enough out of the park that it's all right. Good effort. So,
well, you know, I went back in the batting cage, and I came back with the First Wave Batman.
Was it because of low sales that they're like, let's not even bother to do the Batman solo book?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it would have been existing, you know, by itself in a void. So even though it was Batman, it would have been this sort of alternative universe Batman, and it just didn't make sense.
Okay.
Or dollars to do it.
Yeah, that was a problem. It did make sense. Yes, I understand. No, I guess we've been there before, at least to a degree. So I guess, yeah, if the whole thing isn't working. Well, I'm sorry it didn't work out, man.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that I'm one of those old guys that likes those characters.
Yeah, me too, man.
The young people.
Well. Today. That's all right. Well, I guess, you know, it gives a reason for us older people to go dive in the dollar bins. And if you weren't around for the first taste, there's some good stories there, man. I do urge Doc Savage and Avenger and Spirit fans, if they haven't taken advantage of those First Wave books, to dive in and do it. And obviously, if the hardcover is out of First Wave as well, you know, check it all out, because I do think there was a good pulpy story there. No worries. Well, as we say, that's the past. The future is Spaceman, Wonder Woman, and the next two chapters of Flashpoint Batman.
Yep.
So nice going. No, seriously, man, it's always a pleasure, and I wanted to check in and ask you about these books. So.
Yeah. Well. Batman, I think that people are in for some big surprises, which would be good.
Cool. Well, Ace yeah.
Batman, again, it's going to be, you know, I think we're onto something with this thing. you know, the art I've seen and just the design and you know, what this world's going to be like. I think that people will be, I hope they'll be interested in it, you know.
How many chapters in the first story?
9.
And like you said, that starts in the fall sometime.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, October, November, something like that.
Okay, very cool.
I leave that to the marketers.
Understood. Oh, here's another question, and this is a philosophical, and for lack of a better word, philosophical. If you, again, I don't want you to spoil, but with the day and date digital release at the same time as the paper release of the book, mm-hmm. with the concern and the interest of getting this new digital audience, I think the price point is fair compared to what is there in the stores, the comic stores. My question, though, is, is it changing the way you do stories issue by issue? Because my fear is just in terms of I don't want to see comics go away. And I think it's good that they're going after this digital audience. My concern is if somebody puts down $2.99, $3.99 for a single issue and they're only getting the first chapter of a story, are they going to say, hey, what the fuck? I just spent $3. I thought I was getting a full story. You know, you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I wonder, you know what I mean? What I don't want them to come away with is a bad experience of, oh shit, I just got a first chapter here. This isn't a full.
Well, they'll pay 99 cents for a song.
But it's a full song, bud.
But it's not a full album.
It's not a full, and you're right, it's not a full album, but you know, a song is its own little, you know, a song is a song. It's got a beginning, it's got a finish. You don't need.
Oh, so does every chapter. Every chapter is you know, a good album is like an album.
But you know, too, especially if you want to stay with the music comparison, albums are becoming, you know, meaningless compared to what they were when you had a concept album. And it really was a story being told in music or an idea.
Sure.
So, you know, and again, and most of the comic readers, we're used to waiting a month for the next chapter. We've been trained to expect stories like that. That's, you know, I wonder if, you know, is there any sort of modification in mind in terms of, I want to make sure that this is a you know, its own entity. Like you say, I mean, a good chapter will satisfy somebody.
Yeah.
But,
and
I mean.
It'll make you want to read the next one.
Right. And, you know, dude, you did it, honestly, Wednesday's Comics, think of how little space you had. And every page told its own story and had us wanting to go to the next week. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I know how to, you know, separate and organize a story beat by beat and everything. But I was just wondering if that, you know, is playing in your mind any more than the normal comic story that you've written in the past.
No, not at all. Because those are things that I'm, you know, I'm aware of, and I do anyway. It's almost instinctual, you know?
I do.
At the end of an issue, you've got to wrap up some things and leave some things wide open that people need to know the answers for, you know, and come back the next month. I mean, Wednesday Comics is interesting because I think that Batman story we did, it worked better week to week than it does sitting down and reading the whole thing at once. But, you know, when they did the collection.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. You know, and honestly, I'll admit, I haven't bought the collection yet because I did buy all the newspapers, and I keep meaning to buy it, but I haven't revisited the story since it's completed.
Yeah, sitting down and reading it in one sitting,
mm-hmm.
it's not as good of an experience as the way I designed it, which was, you know, one page a week.
Too choppy, you think, or what do you think? Not enough flow?
I guess there's, you know, when it was week to week, there was time built in. The element of time was built into the story, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And getting every page, it's it's not too choppy. It's just like, you know, you don't really consider what happened on, you know, that particular page, because like you said, you know, it was, you know, each one of those pages really, there was a beginning and a middle and an end. It told something.
Would you do it again?
Was it comic?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
If the opportunity came, hypothetically.
It depends. I don't know. You know, when this thing took off and they were considering doing it again, I got asked, and I told them no.
Was it hard?
I said no. You should get all new people and do all new characters. You know.
Yeah, but you're not. Yeah, but I understand that you're gonna. I mean, and you don't necessarily have to be the guy to do Batman again. But if you are going to do something like that, and again, now thinking of this digital audience, you got to have a Superman story. You got to have a Batman story if you're going to do it.
If I were to do something like that again, you know what I would do? I would do the Joker and Lex thing that Lee and I did for that Superman book.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. That was fun to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we haven't talked since then. That's true. Nice going on that. That's interesting. Very funny. I love those books, man. I really do. They're great. You and Lee are excellent together. And I loved going back to the Deathblow thing that you guys did years ago.
Well, we're going to be doing something else.
Cool. Oh, that's great. Wonderful. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Do you... You know, the Spaceman thing was really, you know, and obviously an introduction in this anthology. That is another thing that I wonder about with the digital properties, is if they're going to play with less pages, more, and selling digital stories that way. And that's why Wednesday's Comics, as we're talking about, I'm like, oh, you know, that would really actually be kind of a good digital product. As cool as it was in the newspaper form, I could also see it, you know. Again, what worries me about this digital thing is waiting a month for the next thing, for a newcomer. Doesn't worry me in a personal standpoint. I could care less. I'm, like I said, I'm used to it. But in terms of, you know, I want 52 titles of DC to choose from at the very least every month. I like that. I'd like it to continue.
Okay. But, all right, we're after new readers, right?
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
I would think so, yeah.
Do they have to be reading current stuff?
Agreed.
You know? And people don't want to wait a month. There's a pretty big backlist there that they can get.
True.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's new readers, they haven't read that stuff.
Definitely.
So there will be a lot of opportunities for them to get it.
I haven't seen, and as we're talking, they just released, Bob Wayne released another press, or it might have been David Hyde that released the press release saying, you know, what the pricing is on day and date stuff, and the fact that it's going to be the same price the first week that it's out as the magazine version, and then a month later it goes down a dollar. But what I didn't see was collected prices on story arcs. And I hope that they take the same idea as the ebooks do, because certainly ebooks, for the most part, don't cost as much as buying a physical book. You are getting, like, you know, a $15 ebook or a $10 ebook, whereas you'd, you know, spend $25 for the actual physical book.
Right.
So I hope that's the case with the collected story arcs.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Likely at the end of this interview, when it's just me, I'll probably have those facts and pass those on to the listeners. But
so the pricing's going to change, huh? Well, that's pretty good.
They just released the press release saying that when it's a month older, the price will go down a buck. You know, the $3.99 books will be $2.99. The $2.99 books on the magazine versions of the $2.99, as soon as they're a month old, they'll be $1.99.
Okay, well then, let's play with those numbers. And, I'll give you, how's $12 for an ebook? You like that?
Yeah, No, I do.
Hey, what?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah. I think that's fair.
That's 6 issues of the comic then.
Right.
Oh, and that's usually what they're collected at right now.
Usually. I would say so, yeah.
So.
Not bad.
They're asking for $12.
Yeah.
You just said it was okay.
I think so.
Okay.
You know. No, I think that's a fair price.
Right.
And as you say, I hope that that is, you know, kind of set up that way in terms of, yeah, did you like that issue? Okay, great. Hope to see you next month. In the meantime, here's Alan Heinberg's Wonder Woman story. $12.
Right.
You know, here's Gail's, one of Gail's stories, $12. Yeah, right. I hope that's the case, man. And again, I know you don't have the answer to that, but I'm hoping,
no.
I'm hoping the bosses do. So, awesome.
Well, I think they should come up with some sort of subscription kind of
sure
plan, and I'm sure that they're thinking of it.
I'm sure they are too. Have you met John Rood at all?
Yeah.
Good guy?
Yeah.
Cool. I honestly haven't yet. Everyone I know that has met him says nothing but good things about him. The writers that have interviewed him have all been very impressed with his credentials and stuff. The other thing that I'm interested in too is I think that partnership, because it's a matter of, you know, getting that audience to check this stuff out. You've got to be where they are and have them come over. And obviously with social networking, if I'm imagining if they are looking up the Green Lantern movie, that some sort of cookie will be embedded and they will see the ads for DC Comics online. But I also think that, and I don't know what the DC equivalent is going to be, but I know Marvel, I think, made a very smart partnership with Starbucks. It hasn't started yet, but essentially that, you know, when you go in and you go on their Wi-Fi, they've got a, you know, a virtual newsstand of things that you can read right there on the front page as soon as you, you know, connect with their Wi-Fi and stuff, and Marvel Comics will be there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's important to get new readers as well, is to, you know, kind of be in those kind of virtual newsstands and stuff. And, oh, look what else I can read, as opposed to just, you know, Advertising Weekly or Popular Mechanics or whatever you're going to be looking at.
Right.
So we'll see. All right, man. Well, listen, I know I've kept you in the dentist chair a nice chunk of time, so I don't want to. And I know how much you love these, so I appreciate it as always, as you know.
No problem. Call me in September.
There you go. Yes. count on it. Honestly, no. Once things get started with Wonder Woman, I want to check back, and also Spaceman as well. And I'm very excited to talk about the new stories.
Yeah. And there'll be some other things we'll be able to talk about then, too.
Oh, beautiful, man. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, keep it up. Nice going.
All right, John. Thanks, man.
Good conversation with Brian Azzarello. Now I know what everyone is asking. Why didn't we talk Wonder Woman? Brian asked that we not discuss Wonder Woman yet. He would like to wait until the fall to talk about Wonder Woman when it's closer to release, and was very kind to say that he would come back and talk to me then. And that's why he said the bit about let's talk in September at the end of our conversation. So wanted to respect his wishes. We'll try and get Cliff Chang on too, and maybe get the creative team together to talk about Wonder Woman and see if the powers at DC will allow that to happen. But a very nice conversation with Brian Azzarello. Let's transition now to Phil Hester, who's got a full slate of books coming out, both previous runs that are being collected in trade and hardback, and also new things. And we start things off with a brand new project that Phil has at Dynamite with some very familiar people. So, Phil, I'm one of the many that is very excited to hear that the Bionic Man is in your hands, and it sounds very similar to what you were doing with Kevin Smith on Green Hornet.
Yeah, the process is almost identical. There was an existing screenplay for the Bionic Man, as there was for the Green Hornet, and somehow it reverted back to Kevin, and Kevin didn't want to just collect dust forever. He wanted it to see the light of the day somehow. And I think his experience on Green Hornet was so much fun for him. He said, you know, why not give it another run with Bionic Man? And so I'm adapting his screenplay, and then we sort of kick it back and forth until it looks like a comic book. And it goes off to Jonathan Lyle, who draws it, and we have a funny book.
The old team is back. Jonathan is back on the book as well.
Yeah, that was sort of, it was kind of gratifying to know that was like a precondition for Kevin, is that we reunited that team for the Bionic Man.
Very cool. And yeah, I like Jonathan's art a lot, and enjoyed Kevin's Green Hornet, and am I allowed to say that I've seen the script? Maybe not.
Sure.
Oh, okay.
I think so.
Well, I was very happy to read it, and it's funny. In November, I was sent the box set of the entire series of The $6 Million Man, and I see, you know, that we really have gone back to the beginning with what looks like, right, you know, this story. And outside of now, you're of age in terms of probably watching the show as a kid.
Yes.
Excellent. One of your favorites as a kid?
Yes. Although, I felt, I'm going to be completely honest.
Qualifier.
I felt the same way about that as I did about Wonder Woman and the Hulk.
Interesting.
Which is, they only do cool things for like the last 4 minutes of the show.
You know? Yeah, yeah, that's true.
The rest of it is like exposition, melodrama, and, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Quinn Martin production kind of stuff.
That's true.
And then in the last 4 minutes, the Hulk would rip off a car door, or the $6 Million Man, or Wonder Woman would jump in reverse motion up a building, you know, or yeah. The kids now are so spoiled.
Oh, dude!
You know, they get these awesome, you know, you get your Spider-Mans and your Thors, and when I was a kid, we were like happy to get a crappy Doctor Strange TV movie.
Hear, hear. Absolutely. Well, it's funny, on the menu DVD page, they always show this one effect, and it's Steve Austin uprooting a fence post, like, yeah, that's, you know, cement reinforced, so yeah, it almost looks like the tip of like a spear or something like that. I mean, it's right, got, you know, that kind of shape to it, and he throws it at like a Winnebago.
Yeah, I remember. and I have to say, without tooting our horn too much, that's the advantage of the comic book over the TV show, is that we have no budgetary constraints. So we have, like, you know, cyborg on cyborg violence. We have, you know, Steve Austin versus a subway train. You know, I mean, big stuff, big
cool
widescreen stuff that we can get away with because it's comics.
And, you know, good, because that's where we should start probably, is for people who haven't ever seen The $6 Million Man, you know the basics, I'm sure, just because how many times through pop culture. But the great thing is you've got this combination astronaut secret agent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, not a bad place to start, I guess, for a hero.
You're predisposed to adventure. that's part of the mythos that stays intact from the TV show to the comic. I don't want to call it a reboot because it's not a reboot. It's just a modern-day take on the character. So he's still Steve Austin. He's still a cutting-edge test pilot, and he still suffers this catastrophic injury that requires him to become the Bionic Man, not the $6 Million Man, because I think $6 million would get you a hearing aid now.
Yeah, no kidding. Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. This is the age of really advanced bionics. I mean, it was kind of still like 2 weeks in the future, I guess, in the early 70s when the show came out, and the books, by the way, as well. Have you ever read the paperback books?
No, I haven't.
As a kid, I got a couple at used bookstores, and they were a little more violent than the TV series allowed. That's another question. I mean, yeah, I imagine along with the super feats, will we see it a little more violent, you think?
If it were a film, it would definitely be a hard PG-13.
Okay.
It's very, the bad guy is very bad. And he requires dealing with in a sort of extreme manner. So, yeah, there's a lot of knockdown, drag-out, comic book-worthy violence in the project.
Cool. And do we tip some of the cast, the supporting cast, or?
Yeah, I think we have to, because they're in solicitations already.
All right, there you go. Okay, fine. All right. Oscar is back. Oscar Goldman.
Yes.
Dr. Rudy Wells is there.
Yes.
And then an interesting wrinkle, I think, to Kevin's story, as far as a female lead, Jamie Summers is here.
Jamie Summers is already part of the story. She's already part of Steve Austin's life at the beginning of the story. And they have I'll let the readers decide, but they have what I think is like a convincing, genuine romance.
Yeah, a healthy relationship is going on. So,
and you get to see the impact of Steve Austin's transformation on that relationship, which is, to me, one of the best parts of the whole project.
Very cool. Yeah, that's, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, it really was like the second or third season that they wrote her in, and
then they had to do all sorts of convoluted stuff to her character to write her into her own show, and And we're not going to do that. She's Jamie Summers, Steve Austin's fiance.
Is there a chance that Dynamite will also be doing a Bionic Woman?
What do you think?
Gee, I don't know, Nick. What do you think?
Well, we'll see when we get the numbers back for Bionic Man number one.
Understood.
And I think they'll be pretty good. And because, you know, we've got the old team back again. Beautiful covers from Alex. And Kevin's loyal fan base. I think, yeah, I think it's, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I think it's, if I were Nikki, yes, there would be a Bionic Woman very soon.
Very cool. And, you know, I can't help but think of the old Charlton series, too.
Yeah.
Back in the day. And, you know, am I right? Neil Adams did a few covers for those, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Really cool. Kind of like bamboozlingly cool ones. Because you buy them and you're like, yes! And then the inside would be Jack Sparling or, you know.
Yeah, they do.
Not to be for Jack Sparling or
no, but he's
Ryman,
not.
But it would be a guy like that. You know?
Yeah, he's not Neil Adams. No, I understand that.
He did that with Emergency, too, I think.
That's true. Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, you know, and this was like the kind of the early days of Continuity Studios.
Yeah.
Because this was kind of in that, like, as he was slowly leaving DC.
Out of comics.
Yeah, yeah. So, interesting. Yeah, you know, so how long is this another 12-issue?
It's going to be almost, I mean, Kevin had such a good time with Green Hornet that we're replicating it almost to a T. So the first 10 issues of this book will be Kevin's adaptation. I mean, will be the adaptation of Kevin's script. And then if Kevin feels inspired to write more, he can. If not, it'll go off on its own, you know, direction after issue 10. Issue 10 is almost... takes almost 10 issues to, like, properly tell Steve's origin and bring a villain up to speed and sort of have him encounter that villain decisively and have a full-fledged adventure or two.
And, you know, are you allowed to... I mean, is Jonathan now kind of coming up with his own concept of what, you know, Steve will look like and everything?
Actually, that was an Alex thing, which is, you know, one of the great parts of working for Dynamite is... I mean, like, at 10 p.m., you can type up a paragraph, and at 10 a.m., you can see what Alex Ross drew from it, which is sort of a kind of unanticipated huge thrill of my career.
Sure.
You know, like I, so we kicked back and forth designs for, like, how to make the Bionics look up to date and have it, you know, it's a comic book. He cannot look like, you know, he can't be a dude in a red jumpsuit. He's got to have a more visually compelling element to him. So we will have a lot of fights wherein his skin is ripped off.
Cool.
And you get to see the Bionics underneath. And Alex really put a lot of thought into how to make these things look modern and cool and compelling. And I have to say, they look dynamite. I mean, well, no pun intended. They look really fantastic. And I think people will be well pleased. So, yeah, we will. It may seem a little contrived, but he will be going through a lot of fires and thorn bushes and whatever it takes to get his skin ripped off so you can see what's underneath.
Very cool. Well, you know, well, and I guess the Bionics were always just his arm and his legs.
Yeah, his arm and his legs and his...
and his eye.
Yeah, his eye.
Yeah, okay. Cause...
I don't want to spoil things, but Kevin addresses something that's... kind of a faulty premise of the original, which is it doesn't matter if you have bionic legs if you don't have a bionic hip.
Fair enough.
You know, you can't run 60 miles an hour on a human hip.
This is true.
You can't lift an engine block over your head with a human spine. So you're going to see some further augmentation to Steve Austin.
Interesting. Okay. Well, and the other thing, too, is I think of two things. One, you know, back in the 70s, you got Pretty Boy Lee Majors, so
yes.
You don't want to ruin his face too much.
Right.
But then also, I think back of the comics of the day, and it's almost like Deathlok got to be the bionic...
cool cyborg.
Yeah. Right, exactly, the cooler cyborg that we always wanted and stuff. And now you can kind of take a page from that kind of idea with Steve Austin. That's cool.
We get to push it a little bit farther, and again, I don't want to spoil things, but... he's closer to Cliff Steele than he is to 1978 Steve Austin.
Cool. Very, very nice. Well, and again, when you were saying, too, about the fashions and that he can't wear the jumpsuit,
yeah.
If anyone wants a real virtual tour of the leisure suits of the 70s, watch the $6 Million Man. The evolution of the leisure suit is from its inception to goodbye. Right,
yeah,
there.
It's really astounding. And it's one of the highlights of the show, actually.
A celebration of rayon.
It is. I mean, God forbid anyone should stand too near a heater.
Oscar, I think it's my bonics. No, pal, it's your suit.
Your suit's melted. Yeah, it's really astounding.
And, and lapels that go from one shoulder to the other. I mean,
yeah, like
shirt
I had
lapels.
Grade school.
Yes, sir. Yeah, exactly. We all did. Come on, man. Every bar mitzvah I went to, I was wearing that stuff.
I saw a picture of myself. I was wearing a tank, you know, like a tank top, like a, you know, forgive the term, but like a wife beater.
Okay, yeah.
But it was made of terry cloth.
Cool.
And I was like, that is so 1975. The terry cloth undershirt.
Oh, man. No, those love scenes between him and Jamie, man, I'm telling you, it's the Spiegel catalog on display. It's not good. It's really not good.
And so all that is, I mean, as much fun as that is, and believe me, for a while we kicked around the idea of making it a period piece because that would be so much fun. But Kevin's script is definitely, it's definitely an endeavor to make it a modern character.
Understood.
And I think, you know, maybe if it's a success, you might see some. I shouldn't be giving these ideas away. These ideas are golden. But wouldn't it be great to do like a miniseries that was, you know,
70s? Absolutely.
Yeah. $6 Million Man set in the 70s.
Hell yeah, dude! You're talking to the right guy. I love all that stuff, and I do think that much like, you know, 20 years ago was fun to do 50s stories and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, no, I think 70s stories are absolutely fun, and all those. The street-level stories, especially the first couple pilot movies for the $6 Million Man were much more like James Bond than what the show became.
Yeah, and we're sort of like that. I think he's a full-on secret agent in this in these 10 issues. You see him doing espionage activities.
That's cool.
And, of course, they have to all go wrong. So he can use his bionics, but...
Are we seeing the world climate of today, or, I mean, is...
Yes, it is definitely today. So it's, that's one of the challenges of the whole project, actually, is that Kevin wrote it in the 90s, when he was a really young guy, like, I want to say early 90s, so he was, you know, in his 20s still.
Okay.
And I had to update that, you know, like, he had people, you know, walking around with those bag cell phones, and you know, we just little things like that.
Oh, sure.
Or in stealing discs instead of, you know, flash drives.
Okay.
You know, I mean, instead of, you know, stick drives. You know.
You know, Matt Wagner and I kind of had this conversation where it's tougher to be Batman these days, I think.
Oh yeah.
You know, so yeah, with the advances in technology, or even something as simple as Facebook and Twitter.
Oh yeah.
So
I read an interesting article that correlated the drop in gang violence to the fact that street corners don't really have dealers anymore. Your dealer is on your phone.
Right.
You don't have to go hunt them.
I don't mean that in a...
Like that's led to like a decline in quote-unquote turf.
Understood.
And well, I mean, they may have overthought it, and there might not be actual ass to back it up. But I thought that was interesting. Take on that.
Well, the Google cameras are all over the place. I mean, you can get streets, yeah, you know, shots and everything. So no,
yeah.
I do. That's why I don't mean to imply that. Yes, my dealer has moved to my phone as well.
Well, our comic dealer.
Exactly. Well, that's happening too. But no, you know, you're right. And I mean, that's I think kind of part of what Matt and I were talking about a year and a half ago. We were discussing that, and that's why. And he was saying too that a lot of these characters work best when you keep them in their actual era that they were created in.
Right.
But I can, you know, I think there is flexibility, and I'm interested to see a modern secret agent, Bionic Man. So I think that's kind of cool.
I don't want to spoil things because it has a lot to do with, he has a new power set, so you'll get to see that on display with his new espionage efforts.
Cool.
I think you'll be kind of surprised and pleased by the new skills he has.
Excellent. So Alex is... do the three of you discuss character design then? Jonathan, you and Alex?
Yeah.
All right, you got three artists there. Why not? Absolutely.
Yeah, that's sort of... You know, it's almost a too many cooks deal, but it still worked out. Because at one point we all had gone off and done our own design, not knowing the other guy was doing it. And I think what we arrived at is predominantly Alex's vision, and really stunning.
You got to get this book to both Lee Majors and Richard Anderson.
Good idea, actually.
You know, seriously. I mean, because God, for the series when it came out on DVD, Richard Anderson is like the star of all the bonus features.
Oh, really?
He's like happy to talk about it. And you know, I am kicking myself. He was at Wizard Chicago last year.
Oh, was he?
And Ethan Van Sciver talked to him, and I'm like, why didn't I talk to Richard Anderson? What a pedigree actor, going back to Forbidden Planet, and I mean, you know, he was one of those guys that came up through the studio system and can really talk old Hollywood. And you know, Gregory Peck told me one day,
yeah, that's cool.
So
he's not one of those guys that's like so hung up on, he doesn't want to relive his past. He's perfectly willing to celebrate it then.
Well, and apparently all of those 80s and 90s revival movies of the TV series, he was the impetus behind them. He's like,
oh, really?
Hey, let's do another one.
Why not?
And I guess they really did do well ratings-wise, and that was always his argument back of like, oh, you know, the last one did pretty good. And he was always able to get it going, and they would come back for him because they all loved him.
Wow.
You know, getting Lee Majors and Lindsay Wagner to go back, and it's like, yeah, all right, what the hell?
I saw her at a con recently, and she looks good.
She does look good. She was at one of, if not this year's Wizard Show, the past year's Wizard Show. She did look good. She had her daughter with her, and yeah, she's...
I saw her at a Planet Comic Con, and she looked great because she looked her age, but she still looked beautiful.
I understand. Yeah, yeah. And
she did not look fake.
And Lee Majors is getting to be more and more looking like a cowboy, because he was going to do... I guess they were going to revive the Big Valley in some way, and he was going to play his character's father in the reboot.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, he was on, like, Oprah or something like that on her last few months, and he talked about it. So, no, I'm excited, man. I'm a big fan, and I've always...
I think the final word on Bionic Man is that if you are a fan of the show, you will not be let down. Like, all the familiar things you expect to see, you'll see. They'll be updated for, you know, the decade we live in, but they will be there.
Fantastic.
And like I said, since we're not the TV show, we do not suffer from the fence post limitations.
Bigger budget.
Yeah.
Excellent. No, that's great, man. And I'm really glad. Now, Jonathan's a wonderful artist, and you and Kevin did such a good job with Green Hornet. I'm glad to hear that you're continuing now, and you and Andy Parks are... continuing running Green Hornet?
Yeah, Andy and I are doing issues, let's see, 17 through 20 together. I did issues 11 through 16.
Yep.
After Kevin left, and then Andy and I do 17 through 20 together. Mostly Andy. I mean, I plotted it and, you know, went over the scripts with him, but they're, you know, he did the day-to-day actual writing on it.
Okay.
And but they're, you know, but I created the characters and the situations that appear in those issues, but he actually scripted the issues.
Gotcha. It's been fun watching Andy grow as a writer, and
I thought he was a great writer because I mean, when you come out of the gates and do Capote in Kansas,
yeah, and Union Station for that matter,
yeah, I mean that stuff is all really top notch quality.
So I agree.
I think it's just a matter of time before he kind of breaks wide.
Well, and I'm glad that Dynamite and, you know, in your case, too, Dynamite and Top Cow are giving you these opportunities, DC as well, as you're wrapping up your run on Wonder Woman.
Yeah, one more issue to go.
Unbelievable.
I tweeted the other day that I'm kind of putting off finishing it because as long as it's still on my to-do list, I can say I'm writing Wonder Woman.
That's true. Do you get to blow all the shit up, Phil? I mean, you know, we are wiping clean now. And
you know, I don't know if I got a... I don't know if I got special dispensation or anything, but in my final issue, I refer to Flashpoint.
Okay.
Obliquely.
Red Skies? Red Skies are up there? Is that what happened?
Yeah. She our story, the Odyssey, comes to a complete conclusion. Like, it is a complete story and a complete arc for Princess Diana. But, in the last few pages, you see that she's achieved her new status quo, you know, things are back to good, and then she sort of, because of what she's just been through with alternate realities and things, she can sense that Flashpoint is coming, and it comes on page 20.
Cool. No, you know, I don't remember how many, you know, books leading into Crisis back in the 80s felt as final. I remember the final issue of World Finest had a really kind of sad ending of Batman and Superman really not friendly with each other and just kind of going their separate ways. And, you know, weird little stuff like that here and there in the DC continuity.
Yeah, we're so old that, like, the reboot to us is like, don't do that soon.
Yeah, but, you know, Phil, honestly, I think we're stronger for it. I honestly, kids, life is tough. Get a helmet. I mean, really, if you're this upset that DC is rebooting, get over it. My God.
And it's not like they come to your house and take your old comics away.
Yeah, there's that. Well, I can even appreciate
the stories are still there.
But I can even appreciate, hey, there's, you know, there was nothing wrong with Secret Six. Why is it going away? I kind of understand that on some titles.
Yeah,
some titles.
But on the rest, I think the attitude I have is not anger or anything like that. It's sort of or even enthusiasm. It's sort of in between. It's a why not?
But that's exactly how I feel. Why not? Right. And they're like, well, what happens if it's screwed up? It's like they move on and they slowly reintroduce everything that worked before.
Yeah.
Big deal.
You come back and do it. I have this attitude that, like, I don't think you need sweeping things like this if you want to start over. I always have this, and maybe I told you a story before, and if I have, I apologize. But I always have this, there's this concept of killing crypto.
Okay.
Like John Byrne didn't want crypto in Man of Steel, so crypto has to die. And you know, they have to write crypto out of continuity. Well, really, if you don't like crypto, just don't use crypto. You know, if you don't like Comet, don't use Comet. You don't have to go out of your way to write him out of existence. Just don't use him. Like if you think Robin is ridiculous, don't put Robin in your Batman story.
Sure.
And I think maybe it's, you know, you don't have to reboot. You just have to say, you know what? Let's just back off continuity for a few years. Let's just pretend. Let's not just make that the end-all be-all. Just tell stories that don't depend so heavily on these things.
I hope that's the case. I kind of understand, too, it doesn't hurt having a big PR push and saying, hey, attention, everybody else, jump in.
That's some place they have just dominated. I mean, there's literally been no other comics news the last couple of weeks. I mean, there have been attempts, but the DC reboots just run roughshod over everything.
Oh, yeah, dude, and honestly, I have no idea if this is true or not, but you can't help but laugh at the timing of the week that X-Men First Class is coming out, that DC cock blocks Marvel, because it's usually the other way around, frankly.
Yeah, it really is.
I'm saying that.
I don't think it hurt that movie in any way. But
and I'm happy that it's a good movie, too.
Yeah, Marvel couldn't get any Marvel couldn't get any PR traction.
No, but I think, you know, again, it's a gutsy move, and we'll see how it works out. But again, I really think it's a win-win. I think even if it doesn't work out, everyone can just juke and move back to concepts that have worked before.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, what's the penalty for trying?
Exactly.
Again,
so
why not? Why not?
Indeed. And back to your world. Tell me about IDW and Godzilla. Because this is really the first chance since it's been up and running. Tell me about working with Eric and how you're enjoying the story.
Yeah, well, my buddy Joe Pruitt and his Desperado Studios kind of partnered up with IDW, I don't know, like probably a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, I don't recall. But like he sort of came under IDW's wing, and they've done a lot of art books and hardcovers through IDW, like my Coffin hardcover. And Deep Sleeper hardcovers that just came out were done through IDW. And Joe kind of wanted to prove his value to the company, and he said, you know, I could get you a name for Godzilla, you know. You don't have to trot out a newbie, you can get a veteran. And he told Chris he could get me, and then he called me.
Awesome.
I said, can I get you? And I said, well, since it's Godzilla, yes. And I don't know if I subscribe to his idea that I'm a name, but I think the reason Godzilla works, I mean, it's been a pretty big success, and I think the reason it's successful is they didn't treat it like it was a chore. They went out and got high-profile names for their license.
Absolutely, they did. No, that's you guys come with a guarantee, basically. You guys have a track record.
They went out and they got, you know, they got Eric Powell and they got me, who are, you know, Eric's a superstar and I'm at least a name that's kind of known. It's not like a, you know, and you know,
come on, Phil. I understand. No, I appreciate your no, I do. I'll say it, Phil. I appreciate your modesty, but I think you prove yourself as a writer with every assignment, and I think the Wonder Woman one was much like Chris Robertson as well. You guys had tough assignments there, and I think you both did yeoman work beyond the fact, too, that while some might not have noticed, your Top Cow work has been exceptional. And so truly, no, I think you're a fine writer, you're a fine artist, and hearing that you and Eric were on Godzilla, I think was only a win-win again for IDW.
Yeah, and to my point, a lot of times when a license book comes down the pike, it's sort of an orphan project. And
sure.
People don't really, and IDW did not treat it that way, and that's sort of true of all their things. You know, they put John Byrne on Star Trek.
Absolutely, and it's been a lot of fun.
It's brilliant.
It really is. It's been a lot of fun.
And so that's what they do with Godzilla. They put Eric and me on it, and it's worked out, and it's been a big hit, and it's a nice book to come back and draw. Although I have to admit, it's a hard book to draw. I mean, Godzilla, he's fun to draw, but there's no quick way to draw Godzilla. You have to draw those scales.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And those wrinkles, those teeth. There's no cheese with Godzilla, but the experience that Chris brought me on has been a lot of fun, and it was right in the middle of me taking on Wonder Woman and still writing a bunch of other books, and they were really understanding that my schedule would run such that there'd be 2 weeks where they wouldn't see anything from me, and then there'd be 2 weeks where I just dumped it on them, you know, and they were really fun to work with. I mean, really accommodating in that aspect.
The interesting thing was, I think the last time we talked, around when the Firebreather movie came out, right. you were telling me that it had been so long since you really sat down and had drawn.
Yeah, it'd been since, I think, November of 2009 since I'd drawn.
Okay, because I was going to... Well, that's right, because you did the one Darkness story, too.
Yeah, I did two issues of the Darkness.
Right.
Sort of the last, outside of covers, the last thing I'd drawn for a comic book company.
Before that, it was, am I right, wasn't it that Superman arc that you did with Clay?
With Clay, yeah.
About the Toy Man and everything? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
So, it's, you know, it's been a while. And it was sort of the right thing to come back on because IDW had that brilliant promotion for it. With the individualized covers of Godzilla destroying your comic shop. Push it into another realm. I mean, it was such a brilliant PR. I have to think that was Ted Adams' idea because Ted's such a sharp guy that that was his idea. But it really raised the profile of that book, and it was nice to go to a con and have a current book out that people were like lining up for you to sign. It was neat.
That's excellent, man. Well, and again, much like Bionic Man, I think, you know, Godzilla is one of those great franchises that, you know, maybe needed a rest, and now that it's back and stuff, yeah, people are really excited about it.
I agree. I think it's such a great franchise, and Eric's got a kind of a fun, fresh take on it. And like I said, they didn't shortchange the talent. They put you know, veteran, well respected people on the book, and it paid off.
What's coming up in Godzilla?
I'm done.
You are done.
I did the first four. Eric is writing it for who knows when. Eric really has a bunch of ideas for Godzilla, so he and Tracy Marsh are writing that book for, I don't want to speak out of school, but for a long time.
Okay.
And I just drew the first four to sort of help launch the book. And there'll be, I don't think they'll necessarily be rotating artists, but I think there might be different artists with each arc, or, you know, like a regular team and then some guys that jump on, off and on.
When does your trade come out?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm the worst person on earth. I don't know when my books come out. I don't know when my trades come out. When the comps show up at my door, that's when I know they're coming out the next Wednesday.
I understand.
I've always been that way, so it's not age. I've been that way my whole life. I think it's I like to have a lot of things going at once, so I'm most, you know, freelancers live in the future, especially comic book freelancers. because we're writing and drawing books that aren't going to be seen for 4 or 5 months.
Understood.
We're always living in the future.
One more.
I don't know.
Well, before we move on to the future, one step backwards. Fire Breather had its Cartoon Network debut. Smash hit over Thanksgiving weekend, correct?
Yeah, great rating. Yeah, everyone was very happy.
Excellent.
And, I think now it's just a matter of making new stuff work in Peter Chung's schedule and Cartoon Network's budget. So those talks are ongoing, and hopefully we'll have some good news for everybody soon.
I hope so, man, because, yeah, it was really, I think, visually really interesting, and I think the story adapted quite well, and I thought it was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I did too. And I think everybody worked on it's very happy with it, and Cartoon Network's very happy with it, and it was, however, really expensive to make.
Sure.
It looks like an expensive movie, and however, is it looks more expensive than it was. That's why when people hear the budget, they gasp that Peter was able to do what he did with that money.
That's terrific.
It looks like a much more expensive movie than it was, and especially on Blu-ray, but you can buy now at Amazon or your big box stores or whatever. The Firebreather Blu-ray and DVD are out, and the Blu-ray looks really amazing.
Are there special features that you guys participated in?
There's an actual, nothing that I participated in, but there's an actual 2D test. There's like a 2D scene. Because for a while it was going to be 2D. Peter loves 2D. Peter Chung had to sort of be forced to do this in CGI.
Interesting.
But once he did it, he fell in love with it. And I think he's on record saying that's the only way he'll ever work in animation again.
Interesting. That's funny because, last night I was watching The Animatrix and was watching Detective Story, his short. And, I forget. And, of course, wasn't he with Cowboy Bebop? Wasn't that his show?
I don't think so. I mean,
maybe not.
I remember he did that Alexander show about Alexander the Great.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
Yeah, it was very stylized, kind of semi-futuristic Alexander the Great.
Oh, wow. I'm going to have to look for that.
And I can't remember what it's called.
And Aeon Flux, he did that, obviously.
Aeon Flux, of course, which everyone of our generation remembers.
You bet. Liquid television at its finest.
Yeah. And, I think he's a genius.
And, oh, yeah.
To hear that this show sort of converted him to CGI was pretty astounding. And just to have his talent work on your project is just mind-boggling.
No, I bet, man. Congrats to you and Andy. I'm so glad that everything worked out the way it did and that it was so well-received, because it's nice when it ends up being one of those, kind of cult favorites and stuff like that, but it's much cooler when it actually succeeds. So hopefully it'll continue.
The thing that I'm most happy about is that we didn't have to apologize for it.
Hear, hear.
We didn't have to say, it didn't quite turn, we can just say, look, it's different from the comic. It's not going to be quite our vision, but it's really cool.
It absolutely is. So, it's funny. I was taking the subway home two nights ago and happened to run into another comic book guy, and we were talking back and forth, and a passenger just said, I saw that amazing Screw-Hon head that Mike Mignola did on that Spike show. Well, how come that wasn't a series? And I'm like, well, there you go. We both shrugged, and it's like, and it's one of the
things, there's so many moving pieces at a network.
Oh, yeah.
And it's cable, but it's a network. And, you can never quite guess which way the winds are going to blow. And all we can hang our hat on is that the reviews were great and the numbers were great, and the show was really good. So all we can do is hope for more.
Understood. Absolutely. Well, let's move forward then and talk about what's still going on at Top Cow, The Darkness.
Yes, I'm moving into my last year on The Darkness, and writing a sort of a definitive ending for the Jackie Estacado saga. The book is not ending. I have to keep reminding people.
Right.
We're going to hit issue 100, which at issue 75 seemed like a really great place to jump off and let somebody else have a crack. And now that it's getting closer, I'm like, oh, I guess I have to leave. But, 100 is going to sort of be my swan song and my last word on Jackie Estacado.
Very cool, man. And what's coming up, what's coming up arc-wise for Jackie?
We're going to have... we are going to have Jackie lose control of the darkness in a way he hasn't before. You know, he's like the Hulk. He loses control.
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
Yeah, he loses control of the darkness all the time. But the dark, that's usually an internal conflict of his. Now we're going to see the darkness sort of fight back against him for the first time. It's always him trying to buck the darkness, and in an upcoming arc, the darkness is going to try to buck him.
Interesting.
And say, you know what? You've been a pain in the ass as a darkness wielder. You know, you have not done the kind of, you know, we were expecting Hitler-level badness, and what we got was a kind of noble cad, and we need real evil here.
Huh.
You know, we wanted to pull pot, and instead we got a Han Solo. You know? And so they're going to go look for a new darkness wielder.
And wow.
He's got to do something about it. And that leads to the last five issues of the book, which are a direct conflict between Jackie Estacado and the darkness on the darkness home turf. And there will be a final battle and a clear winner of that battle.
Interesting.
And it'll be up to whoever they hire to work to go after me to figure out a way to make future darkness stories work.
I love that. It's like when Mark Miller was leaving the Ultimates and when Bendis was leaving Daredevil. All right.
Yeah.
He's in jail. Good luck.
Yeah, your problem now.
That's great, man. Fantastic.
I happen to know who's coming on, and I know he can do it. I know he can make people forget about me very, very quickly.
Well, but that's, you know, honestly, that's the testament to the guys that did follow. I mean, you know, Brew was able to pick up Daredevil and go, yeah all right, I got an idea for that.
That's
and
great.
We had a nice little ride with Brubaker with Daredevil. So, yeah, you never know. Very cool, man. And I'm glad to hear that. You know, these guys at Topco, I'm telling you, you know, I'm glad they gave our pal Jeremy Hahn the nice exclusive. They keep hiring great guys like you, and you guys crank out interesting crime stories and fantasy stories, and I'm glad that, you know, things are buzzing along over at the Cow. That's very good.
And just because it's my last issue of The Darkness does not mean it's the end of my association with Top Cow.
I kind of figured.
We're already working on, I don't want to tease too much, but working on a project that might have a Chicago angle.
Oh, that's great! that's cool.
That would mean something to you and me.
Indeed.
Being sports fans that we are.
Harry Carey, The Further Adventures
yeah,
of...
Yeah, you've got... Oh, how did you get...
Harry Carey as a zombie? Boy, oh boy. Let me have a little piece of that flesh, honey. Ooh.
Taste that kid in the sombrero.
I won't try
Harry Carey, boy. But, Yeah, so one way or another, I think there's a revival of a certain Top Cow associated property out there, and then there's some new projects that we might do. So, yeah, I'm not done at Top Cow.
Very cool, man. No, that's great. It's, you know, man, it's been a great place to see you, like I said, stretch your writer legs there, and or I guess writer hands, and, you know, I think to
I
good effect. Complain.
They took a chance on me when not a lot of places were, and... that all the credit goes to Rob Levin and Philip Zadlick and Matt Hawkins and Mark Silvestri for taking that chance.
That's excellent, man. Now, are you going to be in San Diego?
No.
Ah!
My son is a budding paleontologist.
Cool!
He is between his junior and senior years in high school, and he is going to a paleontology camp in Wyoming where
all
he
right.
actually goes on a dig every day.
That's really interesting. Very cool.
But since he is a minor, I have to be there.
Oh, sorry, Phil.
So it is the exact same way to San Diego. So
that's
it's the first one in, you know, maybe 10 years I've missed.
Oh man, that's right. We were hanging out last year.
Yeah, I've been to. Well, you know what I think I should do? I think I should just say that I'm there.
True.
There's 150,000 people. Who's going to say I'm not?
Well, that's very true, and you know, there were people that I know were there, and I didn't get a chance to see them.
And you know, and so many of the same things happen from year to year. We all go to the same places.
True.
I could just tweet, you know, hey, I'm at the Royal Thai, or, you know.
The fish taco place. I can't remember its name right now, across the street.
Tin Fish.
Tin Fish,
tin
yes.
Fish enjoying a, you know, calamari burrito.
That's true.
I'm in the back row of the Eisners. Can you believe this?
You know.
Understood.
No one would ever know.
This is very true. Are you coming to Wizard Chicago?
No. I have another excuse for that one. It is my anniversary.
Oh, very nice. Happy anniversary. Very good.
Thank you. And I would like to have more, so I will not be able to go to Chicago.
I respect that. Well, dude, my nephew is going to University of Iowa.
Oh,
so,
he is.
So I do really have to plan a trip, like, you know,
during
the school year. Yeah, and, you know, exactly, like, say hi to him and then let him, like, deal with his friends, and I'll come visit you.
It's a fun town. It is. I love college towns, and it's sort of like a little, it's like a mini Madison. It's a fun town.
That's cool. That's excellent. No, he really is. He's having the time of his life. He loves it.
Oh, what's he studying?
I'm so proud of him. He's doing business as his major, but he has a writing minor.
Oh, well, and he came to the right school.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's the thing. So, yeah, no, I'm really excited and very interested to see, you know, what he wants to do writing-wise. But he seems, you know, very serious about pursuing writing as well. So I'm very excited for him.
He came to the right. When I was there, I had to have a gut check moment where I had to decide if I was going to stay in the arts or stay in art or go into the writing end of things, and it was tempting, but I stuck with art. But it's a great school for writers.
Very cool.
City of Literature, one of three in the world.
Why not? I like it. No, I don't know what that means, but I'll tell you.
I don't either. I think there's a lot of, it means that the guy pumping your gas is a PhD.
Okay. Very cool. Well, that's great, man. No, I'm very happy that it sounds like you got a bunch of new projects coming up. I'm glad that the run on Wonder Woman, you know, it sounds like you had a nice, satisfying time.
Yeah, it was fun. And, you know, when somebody asks if you want to write Wonder Woman, you say yes. I don't care what the circumstances are. I had the same discussion with Chris. You know, if somebody rolls up on you and said, you want to write Superman, you say yes.
Well, I remember, if it wasn't our last conversation, it was the second to last, where you told me you stopped chasing Batgirl, and
yeah.
I'm glad to see that it seems like the heroes are coming to you, and that's great, because
that's,
you know.
Good, yeah. That's sort of the goal, yeah.
Absolutely, man. Well, continued success, and looking forward to the Bionic Man. The Bionic Man starts in September?
And actually, we dodged that bullet. We start in August.
Ah, fantastic.
So we dodged that,
the reboot.
The reboot bullet, yes.
That's excellent, man. So so then Bionic Man starts in August, and your run with Andy on the Green Hornet starts next month?
Yes, it is.
July?
I think so. I think the next issue is, yep.
Very
and,
cool.
And, you know, I'm still working on Darkness.
Yep.
Working on Fire Breather when that comes out.
Fantastic.
And, I'm, you know me, John. I stay busy.
When is Fire Breather ongoing right now, or is it?
It's a miniseries, I have, my buddy is, my beloved Andy Kuhn is kind of a slow Nick.
Okay.
So it just comes out when he's done with it.
Oh, I see. Okay, how many issues have you got left for the miniseries?
We have two more.
Okay. Fantastic. All right, there you go, man. And then, of course, people can reach back and get the Coffin. They can get the Anchor.
Yep, they can get the Deep Sleeper hardcover, which just came out.
Congrats. Very nice.
Thanks. And, I you know, my stuff's everywhere.
There you go.
You could try to avoid it, but I don't think it's possible.
You can run, but you can't hide from Phil Hester.
That's right. I should be cutting a wrestling promo.
That's awesome, man. Well, I hope to see you soon. So, and
right,
really, whenever there's something new you want to talk about, you know you've always got the soapbox here.
Well, you can call me anytime. We don't have to have anything to talk about.
Exactly. There you go.
You just call me and we'll see how people like that.
I think we managed to
I would
you know.
Be the opposite of the Bendis tapes. The Bendis tapes, you break news.
Oh, please.
And the Hester tapes will just be you and me talking about, like, we'll watch a show together on the phone.
Phil, we got...
We'll watch a Golden Girls or something on the phone together.
We can
riff track.
I'll tell you, hey, man, you know, I keep meaning to amass this, and I know you're one of us, Planet of the Apes Roundtable.
Oh, yeah.
So, really, we got to get you like you and Gabe Hardman and Jeff Parker. And Art and Franco are big at Planet of the Apes guys and stuff because...
I'm looking forward to it. Except for the movie, the new trailer committed that cardinal sin.
Which, what's that? Tell me, please.
The new... And the same thing, I saw the trailer for Real Steel. It did the same thing. It condensed the movie and showed the movie.
Yeah, I suppose. That's true.
I hate that.
Yeah, that's a good point. But...
They showed the whole movie in 2 minutes.
I'm still excited to see it. I got to be honest.
I prefer the Super 8 approach where you keep as much under wraps as possible.
Well, I guess because we got bit so bad by Tim Burton last time.
Yeah, oh, did we?
This really looks like a step in the right direction again.
It looks like a genuinely scary movie to me.
Absolutely. Oh, the I forget the name of their special effects people that do those CGI and the whatever.
Practical.
Yeah, because they're the guys who did Avatar as well.
Right.
But they're amazing. I mean, that's the thing. God, the apes look really scary.
Yeah.
So
it looks like a good science fiction movie, and then about halfway through, it turns into a zombie movie with gorillas and monsters.
I got no problem with that.
Which is really terrifying.
And I'm excited for Archaea's little in continuity book that's coming out too.
Yeah, and Boom with their book too.
So yeah, absolutely.
Stuff all over the place.
So there you go. All right, so maybe Phil Hester will be part of an Ape Talk panel at some point.
I would just be a fan, though. I mean, I'm not associated in any way, but
no. But that's the thing. We're all just throwing down because you know Parker and Hardman. They have nothing to do with it. We're just throwing down on apes. We just want to. Maybe we should talk about the movie.
We're all in our 40s.
Pretty much, but it's funny and it's
if the Planet of the Apes really means something to you, like big time, you're in your 40s. Or older. You know?
But, dude, it is such a great continuity, especially the first five movies. I love those movies.
Oh, yeah.
Even the fifth one.
Those blew my mind when I was a kid. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
Beneath the Planet of the Apes blew my mind when I was a kid.
It scared the hell out of me.
Oh, terrifying.
When they take those masks off of the underground people, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It still creeps me out.
Yeah, and spoiler, every kid my age is already terrified of nuclear annihilation.
Exactly.
They have to break out a nuclear bomb at the end.
Oh, my God. And then just that they're in church and they sing those, like, off-key, choruses and stuff. About a month ago, I was at Dark Tower, one of our good stores in Chicago, and bought, like, five of the Marvel black and white magazines.
Those are so cool.
And I loved them. And we were talking about it. Brubaker even brought up how great those Doug Munch backup stories were that always were, like, really weird little, like an island where everybody's like living like King Arthur or the riverboat where it's all New Orleans gambling and stuff going on and everything. Hilarious. There you go. All right. See, we just did it.
Yeah. We had our own little round table.
Excellent. No.
You can edit it out later because I'm sure people will be reaching for their mouths when they hear the start to ramble about Planet of the Apes.
No, there's a pocket of Word Balloon fans that love Ape Talk, so they'll be very happy that this spontaneous episode of Ape Talk happened to break into the our talk. So thank you, Phil, and we'll have you on the roundtable when we do Ape Talk.
Thank you, John. Anytime, buddy.
Okay, there you go, Phil Hester, and a great little segment of Ape Talk right there at the end. Make sure you check out the wrap-up of Wonder Woman, which is already on stands, coming up in August. It's the Bionic Man from Dynamite, plus Top Cow the Darkness. Check that out as he wraps things up with Jackie Estrada. And look for the collection of Phil and Eric Powell's first story arc for Godzilla from IDW. Today, Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service, DCBService.com. Great savings happening at DCBService.com for all your monthly pre-order needs. Some of the special savings that are coming up from Archaea, the Tale of Sand hardcover, 45% off, $13.72. Simpsons, Treehouse of Horror, number 17, 35% off, just $3.24 for that collection. You can get the Meta Barons Ultimate Collection slipcase, 30% off for just $90.97. From Legendary Comics, Frank Miller's Holy Terror hardcover is going to be 45% off, just $16.49. And then at InStockTrades.com, take a look around, and you'll find a lot of Brian Azzarello product right there and Phil Hester product. So check it out. The deals are waiting for you at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service, DCBService.com. John Sutra saying thanks again for listening to Word Balloon. The march to San Diego continues. We are just 2 weeks away from preview night. And great episodes of Word Balloon leading all the way up to San Diego. Plus, we'll have San Diego coverage, not only from the floor, but I will be moderating two panels, Jonathan Hickman's Spotlight panel, looking forward to that, and also the podcast panel. Hope to see you there. I'll have Word Balloon magazines at the con as well, handing those freebies out. So if you come to either of those panels, you can grab one from me. I'll try to keep them in my bag, too, as I'm walking around. But I like to travel light, so you know you'll forgive me. I'm going to be doing a lot of walking in San Diego. But I hope to see you there if you're going to be out there for Comic-Con. Until next time, thanks again for listening. Don't forget, Word Balloon is weekly at ifanboy.com. But we also have our archive. We have lots of shows that don't necessarily make it to the iFanboy page. You know, for instance, this weekend we had from the Summit City Comic-Con, the digital panel, and it was a great talk about digital comics.
And more of that coverage coming up. There are other interviews as well. Lots of programs. I mean, we're at iFanboy Weekly, but if you know Word Balloon, sometimes we have a big month. And that's the plan for June, is to give you as much coverage as we can leading up to San Diego and after San Diego as well. Until next time, thanks again. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2011.